This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In this episode of Marginalia, I spoke via Skype with author Oyinko Braithwaite at her home in Lagos, Nigeria. That's also the setting of her debut novel, which has a spoiler of a title, My Sister, the Serial Killer. The sisters are Korede and Iola. Korede is older and takes quite seriously her responsibility to protect her younger sister, even to the point of cleaning up after Iola's nasty habit of killing her boyfriends. I visited with Braithwaite just before the novel's release. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. The story is told from Korede's perspective. Talk to me a little bit about her.
I was saying that it's hard for me to talk about Korede without talking about Iola because they're almost like two sides of the same coin to me. But yes, Korede has a very strong desire to protect her sister. I think it almost doesn't occur to her that Iola is more dangerous than the things that she's trying to protect Iola from.
And then how does Iola differ from her sister?
Iola lives in her own world. You know, Iola's completely oblivious to a reality other than one that she's fashioned for herself. You know, she's far more selfish than Korede is. From the start, she's willing to sacrifice herself in order for Iola to be okay. But I don't think that Iola thinks of anyone really other than herself. But I do think they're similar in that I think they both sort of been pigeonholed into these roles from a very young age.
Now, Korede, it's told from her perspective, as we talked about. And so she talks about herself and how she differs from her sister in others' reactions to both of them, to others realizing that the two are sisters. Because Iola is quite beautiful, and Korede feels that whenever people see the two of them together. Now, you know, Iola's connection to these deaths and to these missing men is undeniable, but she's just really not under much scrutiny from others. What is it about beauty that seems to overshadow doubt?
I think, for me personally, I think that, you know, I grew up on a lot of classic literature, and there's this idea, I think, of beauty and of purity being synonymous with one another. There was this idea of the young, beautiful maiden, and I don't think anybody would kind of suspect that someone who was supposed to be pure would be capable of such things. And I think I see that in society as well today, where we're more forgiving, not even that there isn't any doubt, but we're more forgiving of people who are beautiful and people who come across as being superior in some way. I think the way even celebrities are treated, I see Iola in that same light, that she's so beautiful that it doesn't cross anybody's mind that she could be guilty. And she's also very childlike, you know, so it doesn't cross anybody's mind that she could be guilty of anything gruesome or anything horrifying or anything even just mean.
Talk to me a little bit about the girl's parents in the novel. The father is dead, but he's not missed, is he?
No, actually, you know, it's funny. Nobody has actually asked me. Yeah, I guess he's not. I mean, yeah, I suppose he's not missed. But also because his effects, I think he's still very much present. And his, you know, the effect he had on them is ongoing. But he was an interesting character to me because I think Korede has to explore this idea of how much of her father is in Iola and how much of her father is in her, you know, and even the mother who, if anything, I feel like the mother, to some extent, is the outsider because she's the one who doesn't have his blood running through her. And, you know, she may actually be unable to appreciate the kind of horrifying things that are going on around her. But Korede and Iola, both of them are broken in some way.
And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that the mother does not have any of that blood running through her. It made me wonder, I mean, do you think she was swayed by Iola's beauty as well?
Yeah, I think so. I also think Korede is as well. I think Korede is also obsessed because I've noticed that a lot of people talk about the way the men are obsessed with Iola's looks, but the women are as well. I think people are noticing the men because of where we are right now as society, and it's like, oh yeah, men are. But it, like in this particular book, the women are just as shallow, because even when Ayola first is introduced to Korede's colleagues, Tade is not the only one who has this sort of reaction towards Ayola. The women do too. And Korede bangs on and on about Ayola's looks, partly because, yes, she's had to deal with it all her life, but I think she also knows her sister is beautiful and she's also attracted to her sister's beauty.
So, you know, so we talked about Korede being the storyteller in this novel. Do you think she's a reliable narrator?
No, I don't. Actually, no, do you know what? I actually wrote her as a, in my mind when I was writing her, she was a reliable narrator. But later on, I thought about some of the things that she said. It just occurred to me that there's never any proof. There's some things that I feel like are never verified necessarily. Like, for example, her looks. You know, she really talks quite negatively about the way that she looks. But other than, you know, maybe Yinka, one of her colleagues, who we already know is not the nicest person, I'm not sure, like, I'm trying to remember, but I'm not sure that anybody actually tells her that she's unattractive necessarily. So I don't know how much of her lack of attractiveness is that she's actually genuinely unattractive or she just perceives herself to be that way. Then the way the events unfold sometimes, I'm not entirely sure how even blameless Korede is. So I'm not sure. I don't think she's a reliable narrator. Like, I know in writing the book, I know some people have sort of complained about how unclear some things are in this novel. And I that's the way I sort of write. I don't like to know everything. But and because I don't like to know everything, I've been asked, you know, what exactly happened with the father? Did they kill him? Didn't they kill him? And I'm not 100% sure how those events played out. I have an idea. But I also think Korede, which is why I also think that she's not reliable, because I'm not sure Korede is entirely sure herself. I think that there's a trauma that she has kind of, she glances over it because she doesn't know, or she hasn't accepted 100% how the events played out.
Do you have a sister?
I have two sisters and a brother.
Are they
older? They're all younger than me.
They're all younger. Do you feel that same
yes,
kind of,
they are.
Do you still feel that same kind of responsibility to protect them that Korede did?
Yes, I think so. I think, I mean, the funny thing is the girl after me, she's, of the two of us, she's the more responsible one. And I used to kind of question this whole idea, like, why was I born first? Like, I know I went through a phase when I was younger, wondering if God had made some kind of mistake. Like, it just didn't seem like I was supposed to be the eldest. And now I'm older and I think I can see some benefits to my being the first child. But, you know, with the Nigerian culture, being the eldest child is a big deal. You know, here they sort of say the eldest child is thought to be the one that opened the womb, you know, because before you there were no kids. So after you, that's when the rest of them come. So there is this responsibility that is placed on you from day one. They strive to be successful and they work very hard because you have in the back of your mind that, you know, your future, it's not just your future, it's the future of your siblings as well.
Is it true that you first had the idea for the story when you learned about the mating habits of black widow spiders?
Yes, it is.
What about black widows fascinated you?
I just thought it was funny. Like, I don't know how, I just thought it was funny. I mean, they're there, you know, they're having a good time. And then afterwards, if the female decides she's hungry and the guy is still there, you know, it's a very interesting morning after experience. So I just thought it was hilarious and it kind of stayed in my mind. Actually, the first time I took advantage of this idea was in a poem actually called Black Widow Spider. It immediately like had its effect on me.
In the acknowledgments, you thank a person for taking the time to add accents to your Yoruba. I understand mm-hmm. that although that is the language of your roots, you feel more comfortable writing in English?
I don't really speak Yoruba. I can understand it. You know, so if people are speaking around me, I can follow it almost perfectly, but I don't really speak it. So I wouldn't have been able to do the accents myself. I can only write in English. There's no other language I can write in. So I can write in Yoruba. I can do the occasional sentence in Yoruba as I do in the novel, But even that, I made sure people checked it to ensure that I hadn't gone off on a tangent and I wasn't making up stuff.
Your Instagram bio reads, Christian in walking, writer in transit, animator in training. Talk to me about those descriptors.
I guess, you know, it's funny because
Do you want to change it?
I should edit that too. But yeah, I should edit it because, you know, this was before the book. So I feel like I can, no, but I do feel like, okay, so I suppose, yeah, so those were the things, those are the three things at the time I figure were the most significant about my journey as going through this life. You know, so as a Christian, I'm practicing, you know, being a loving person and being kind and being, you know, just practicing that thing on a daily basis. And then as a writer, I've been writing since I was in primary school, but as I grew older, I started to study it a lot. You know, I did it as I read creative writing and law as my degree, and like in my room I have a lot of books on writing, and I sometimes do short courses on writing, so I'm constantly trying to improve my craft. You know, I guess that's what I meant by writer in training. And you know, with the animator, I love to draw, and I would really like to at some point have like a cute little animated project, but we're working on that.
Now, you were also, in 2014, you were shortlisted as a top 10 spoken word artist in the Echo Poetry Slam. And in 2016, you were a finalist for the Commonwealth Short Story Prize. So writer, animator, spoken word artist, what's next for you?
Still the animation. Well, I mean, I would like to focus on being a novelist for a bit whilst I still try and improve on the animation side of things and on illustrating, because I'm still learning how to draw as well. So on those two aspects, I'd like to spend a lot of my time on that and on writing. With spoken word, I was never a great spoken word performer. I kind of feel like I have to put that out there. I think I'm good at writing poetry, but performance is not my greatest skill.
One of the characters in this in the book, he was a poet. So was that all of your poetry?
Yes. So most of them were written for the book. Mm-hmm. But I think there was one that I actually got lazy and I took it from a poem I had written myself. But most of them were done for the book.
You have worked in publishing before. Is there anything about, you know, the publishing process or publishing this novel that has surprised you?
I thought I knew what the publishing process would be like. And I really had no idea what I didn't realize, because as a writer, you're on your own a lot, you know, and it's a very sort of solitary art, but the publishing process isn't. And it's weird handing over something that's so dear to you and watching people treat it like it's their own and doing their very best by it. I know a lot of the book's attention is due to the book's title, and that wasn't me. That was my agent, Claire. And she's fantastic. I wouldn't have on my own chosen a title that was so on the nose, but it's done brilliantly for the book. I think that's one thing that I kind of didn't see coming and has been such a blessing.
That was Oyinko Braithwaite, author of the book My Sister the Serial Killer, which was published by Doubleday. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. You can discover more episodes at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.